Otherwise, I think we're just about good on time to start. Good afternoon, everybody. Is there anybody there? Do you know what? I need to say to you here this afternoon, I can't see beyond about the fourth row. It goes very, very bright lights and it goes very, very dark. So if there is some kind of indication of life beyond the fourth row, is there anybody up there beyond the fourth row? Hooray! Hooray, thank you. I might ask for more indications of life as we go along. So good afternoon. Thanks a lot for coming to the session. It's great to see so many people in here. It's really exciting also for me to be here. I'm very pleased to be here at Deck Days. If we haven't met before, then proper hello to you. My name is Mike Talty. I work for Microsoft in the UK. And as I do at every kind of session like this, I have all of my contact details on the slide. So if you want to get hold of me one way or another, you can mail me. My mail address is on there. You can find my website. My website address is on there. And you can tweet at me as well. So my Twitter address is on there. Who's tweeting these days? Who's actually tweeting? Oh, not as popular here as it was yesterday for me in Holland. So that's interesting. Okay. But those three people might want to tweet at me at some point if they want to do that. If you tweet at me during the session, I won't be responding or reading those tweets. I'll have to read them later on. It's okay. You don't need to seek cover as you run past me here. It's fine. And so what we've got here is around about just a little bit over an hour to talk about a new framework that comes with Silverlight 4. It's called the Managed Extensibility Framework, or MEF to its friends. And we'll talk about that for the hour. I'm hoping to walk you through some fairly simple examples and hopefully get the concepts across to you. Is anyone in the audience already programming with MEF? One chap, I think, at the back, I can just about see. So a couple of you. Okay, so if you're new to MEF, this should be the session for you. I'm not expecting you already to be a MEF expert or a MEF practitioner. I intend to start from scratch. So hopefully this will be a good session for you if you are coming new to MEF. Okay, so what is MEF? What is this Managed Extensibility Framework? Well, I came up with a definition of it. I put it on the slide here. This is my definition. This is not an official Microsoft definition. I don't get to make official Microsoft definitions. This is just my definition. I probably said something like, the Managed Extensibility Framework is an extensible framework for composing applications out of a set of parts or pieces or components that the framework brings together and composes for you at runtime, with the possibility that those components may evolve and change at runtime. So the Managed Extensibility Framework is a framework that puts things together for you, takes a set of components and puts them together for you as a composition, and also supports the idea that those components and that composition could change over time. It's quite an abstract definition that I've given you there. Hopefully we'll flesh it out as we go through the session. There are actually three versions of MEF running around in the wild, pretty much. The version that we are going to talk about here is the version in the .NET framework that ships with Silverlight 4. Silverlight 4 is currently in release candidate, and I'm using the release candidate here today. I think we've already said that Silverlight 4 will launch in the days of 12th to 14th of April at the Dev Connection show in the US. So Silverlight 4 is very definitely on its way. And that is the version of MEF that I am dealing with here today in this session. However, there are two other versions of MEF that you might find. There is a version of MEF coming in the full .NET Framework 4 with Visual Studio 2010. They are also currently at release candidate status. And there's another version of MEF, just to point this out to you, living up on CodePlex. So if you go to mef.codeplex.com, you will find another version of MEF. What you can do with that primarily is build it for .NET Framework 3.5 SP1 or Silverlight 3 or other interesting places. I've already seen some people building it for the Windows Phone, I believe. And also, just as a learning resource, I don't know if you're these kinds of people or not, I found that resource really, really useful because, of course, that has the source code. And so if you like poking around in source code, there's a version of MEF up on CodePlex with source code. But just to be super clear, what I'm going to talk about here is the version of MEF in Silverlight 4. That's the version we're using here, and we're using the release candidate to talk about it. So as part of putting this talk together, I came up with a sort of very, very simple scenario that we're going to follow through the rest of the talk, almost. Okay, I wanted it to be the whole talk, but we didn't quite get there. So for almost the rest of the talk, we'll follow this very simple scenario. And when I was writing this talk, I was sitting in my house and connecting up network players to play music, and I was struggling with iTunes, actually, as it happens, when I was trying to write this talk. And the piece of functionality I was struggling with is the piece of functionality we'll kind of play with here for the rest of the talk. And so, you know, when you're in iTunes or Media Player or something like that, and you want to get the album information for your songs off the internet, you know, you go on Right Mouse and you say, get me the album information. And the media client goes off and gets that album information. And normally it gets you the artist and the tracks, and it gets you a picture of the album cover. And often, personal gripe for me in iTunes, it seems to come back with the wrong one, but never mind. So that kind of functionality is kind of what I want to just play with here through the rest of the session. It's very, very simple. So let me put that on the screen for you. Imagine that you are the person writing the media player at the top, and you have this job of going to get album information. And let's decompose that down into a couple of components. So I called them the album information provider, and the album information provider gets you the title and the tracks and the artist and all that stuff. But then it uses its friend, the album art provider, to actually go and get you the picture of the artwork. So it's just three components in a hierarchy, basically. It's the player, it's the album info provider, it's the album art provider. And in my particular picture on the screen, what they do is the media player constructs the album info provider. It does a bit of work, and then the album info provider constructs the album art provider. And in the example on the screen, there's a method call going down that's called something like get info, passing the name of a particular album. So obviously, if we build components like this, we get into more difficult situations in terms of things like testability. The way I've got those components at the moment constructing each other explicitly would make it rather difficult, for instance, to unit test that blue component in the middle, because the blue component in the middle goes off and just constructs the component at the end of the chain. So from a testing perspective, that's not perfect for unit testing. And you might be familiar with using tools like inversion of control containers and dependency injection to work around those sorts of things. And you would probably, in that case, separate these components initially by interface. So for instance, let's make it such that my media player only knows about an interface, iAlbum info provider. And let's make it so that my info provider only knows about an interface, iAlbum art provider. Does this make sense? Should we agree on a signaling system? If you make a noise, something like, let's take that as a yes. Does this more or less make sense? Beautiful. I'm loving it. All right, so let's go over and take a look at how we might use MEF in this scenario. Let's have a look at MEF in our simple scenario. So I'm here in Visual Studio 2010 RC, and it's a project that we've already got created here. The first thing to say, I suppose let's run it first. Everything very simple. So we run this up. You can search for your album. You click search. You get some information. You get a picture. Just so you are in on the secret, there is only one album in this world that this client can search for, and that's it. Okay? It took me a very long time to write. So you can do this. Let me show you how this is put together. The first thing to say is that we are using MEF in this particular solution. MEF lives in two assemblies, system.componentModel.composition and system.componentModel.composition.initialization. Okay, so it lives in those two assemblies. You don't always need both. Some situations you will. And let me just take a look at what we've got here on the screen. Of course, we had some UI, so that's some XAML. I'm not going to spend very long in here. What you see is we have things like text boxes for the UI, data bound to a set of search text. We have a button that fires the search. We have some places to store the results, like an image which is data bound to a property to replace the image, and bound to a title, and bound to the artist. And that's kind of it. That's the UI. I doubt that we'll ever see the UI again. So living behind that is we have our main page, which is just the code behind that particular UI. And if you take a look at it, you'll notice that this piece of code has a property where it is using an album info provider. That's the component we talked about on the slide. But all it knows about is iAlbum info provider. Let me just show you that interface very quickly. Let's just jump over there and see that. iAlbum info provider has one method on it, get me the album info given the title, and bring back this metadata. And the metadata just consists of a title, an artist, and a URI for displaying an image. So that's your iAlbum info provider that we have there on the screen. Going back to our main page. So the main page here has an album info provider defined by iAlbum info provider. But what the main page never ever does is construct one of those things. I have an implementation of that interface over here, it's in this class here. We have an album info provider that implements the interface. But this main page does not construct that. However, it does just use the property down here as though somebody did construct it. And the way in which that happens in this particular case is you'll notice that on this info provider here, we have an import attribute coming from MEF. What that says to MEF is, I need this extra piece of functionality, but I don't have the foggiest clue where it might come from. And furthermore, I don't care. I just want it. So in this particular case, we say, I need an album info provider by importing it here. And then we make the one and only function call in this whole sample to MEF, which is this one here, composition initializer, satisfy the imports on this object here. And what MEF will do is it will see this import up here and say, aha, you are looking for an iAlbum info provider. Well, guess what? Over here, there's a guy who says he exports himself as an iAlbum info provider. So that's kind of cool. I could create one of those things and plug you two together. You could be friends. This would be a beautiful thing. When we actually implement our functionality here, you'll notice that some of the metadata is simply hard-coded. And the last piece of metadata comes from the artwork provider. And notice on my info provider, we are importing an iAlbum art provider. So not only is this guy exporting something, he also imports something too. And if we take a look over here, you'll see iAlbum art provider is a very simple interface. Get me the art. Okay, so that's very simple. And our implementation over here says, here's an album art provider that implements that interface, and he exports himself as an iAlbum art provider, and everything else is hard-coded. So if you remember what we're doing here, we create an instance of main page when the application spins up. It calls MEF to say, I have imports. MEF sees this import, knows it's an iAlbum info provider, knows that there is an implementation over here, and we will come back to how it knows that during the rest of the talk, sees that it exports itself that way and says, great, sees that this class has further imports, so goes off and again satisfies those imports using this class here. And so we chain those three components together without us ever having to expressly construct anything in any way, and that all kind of works in the way that we see. So let's pop back over to our slides for a second. In as much as what I showed you, did it make sense? We haven't agreed a signal for no here, have we? What should that look like? Ooh. What about, ooh, we'll try that. Does it leave, oh no, I still want a yes anyway, this is the wrong question. Does it still leave you with a whole bunch of questions about how the heck does that work? I'm not sure what that response was. It doesn't matter, let's carry on anyway. So this should leave you with a whole bunch of questions, because what I've just presented you with looks like magic, and in some ways it is, and in other ways, of course, it isn't. So let's move along a little bit. MEF models the world as a set of composable parts. There's one on the screen there. You can think of a composable part as just being a component, or in some cases you might think of it as being an object, but component is more accurate, really. MEF sees things as composable parts, and what it says is if you want to play with MEF, then what you need to do is you need to mark up your composable part in some way to describe its imports and its exports. So for instance, I might be a composable part like Microsoft Excel, and I might want to import a graphing engine or a calculation engine. I might be Microsoft Word, and I might want to import a spell checker. I might be a logging component that logs things in the event log, and I might want to export that logging functionality. So imports and exports. But MEF models the world as composable parts that specify their imports and their exports. What MEF then does is it composes things, and I think that's a really descriptive term. So this picture is a representation of how in my head I view MEF. What you do in MEF is you walk up to MEF and its composition engine, and you throw a bunch of parts at it, like so. Okay? So you just walk up and you say, look, MEF, here are a bunch of parts that describe their imports and their exports. And then you get MEF to shake the box. And what it does is it runs a composition on those things. And say, for instance, you want this red part here that I've kind of represented on the diagram. Then what MEF does is you say, hey, MEF, I want one of those red things. And it says, oh, okay, the red thing. Now, he needs one of these yellow components, one of these green components, and the yellow component, he needs a couple of these blue components. I will string them all together for you and give you back that graph of objects. And one of the nice things about MEF is that the objects themselves do not have to walk up to the system and say, hello, I'm an object, I would like to register myself. That step simply doesn't really exist in MEF, and you'll see why as we go along. But basically our job is to have components with imports and exports and throw them at MEF. The question then becomes of, well, how does MEF know which imports match which exports? And so you can see on the screen here we've got a red part which has a bunch of imports and a bunch of exports, and the green part which just has the one import. How does MEF know that the import on the green part is a suitable match, for instance, the export on the red part up at the top of the screen? How does MEF figure that out? What it does is it uses a thing called contracts. It uses a notion called contracts. So you can see over on the export over there, we've got a contract that says, firstly, the contract will have a name. Now, usually your contract name is a .NET type name. We usually just take it from the .NET type name. That's a bit of a simplification, but generally speaking, that's kind of true. We also have the notion of whether your part is shared or not. That is, if somebody imports your part, do we create one instance and share it with everyone who imports it? Or do we create a new instance for everyone who imports it? A little bit like, is it a singleton in some ways? Is it a singleton or is it shared? And then finally, we have this notion on that contract of metadata. You can decorate that contract with any arbitrary metadata, string to objects, to differentiate it from some other contract in your program. Over on the import side, notice that there's a contract there as well. And that contract also specifies a name. That contract also specifies cardinality. I am Microsoft Excel. I am trying to import one calculation engine, not 32. Or maybe I want 32 different logging engines. So cardinality is a part of this as well. What's the cardinality of this thing? Also, we have this idea of being shared again. So the export might say, I am going to be shared. So if I get exported 7 times, it'll be the same object instance. On the importing side, I might say, no, I am not prepared to share an object instance with anybody else. I want my own object instance. Thank you very much. And then obviously there would be a disagreement between those two contracts. One wants shared, one doesn't want shared. So that matters at the export side and the import side. We also have a notion of recomposability. And what this is about really is that things change over time. So the idea of recomposability is, having had MEF connect two components, can that situation be reevaluated over time as other components show up? And I'll show you how that happens later on. And then finally, again, we have this whole notion of metadata over here, which is just an arbitrary set of string object values to further differentiate the contract. So let me go and have a bit of a play with imports and exports, and hopefully you get a feel as to how we can do this as we wander back over here. Let's go back over to our screen. So this is a slightly different project, but it's almost identical. Let me just walk you through and describe the subtle differences here. So once again, we've got our main page. And our main page is once again importing an album info provider and using it. But notice this time it is not importing it by interface. It is importing a concrete type. So you can import things by type. You don't have to import them by interface. And notice this would also import anything derived from that type as well. It would match those two. So you can import by type. We're still doing the same call to satisfy imports. And then if we go and take a look at the actual implementation of album info provider, you'll notice that what it has done is it's exporting itself by type now, not by interface. And furthermore, what it's doing is it's also going ahead here and it's saying, right, what I'm doing is creating myself an importing constructor. So previously, we imported onto a property. But now what we're doing is we're actually importing onto a constructor here. So we're doing an import onto the constructor. So when this class is constructed, MEF will find one of these things for it and pass it into the constructor. And I don't think our album art provider over here has changed at all. Oh, one thing has changed. We have specified that the part creation policy is non-shared, which matches up with what we were talking about on the slide. That's the part creation policy for this particular part. Okay, so let's just play around a little bit with imports and exports. Let's go back to our info provider. Oh, let me show you this is kind of probably working at the moment. Let's just make sure it is before we take it apart and break it probably. It's good to start with something that you know was working. Let me just press F5 on that. Okay, so it's still is obviously very basic functionality, but I could still break such simple functionality. And it seems to be working at the moment. So first off, let me just show you how we can do some imports and things. So let's go to this class, and let's say firstly, let's imagine you want to import onto a field. So on this info provider, let me get another art provider. Let's say public iAlbum art provider, and let's just say art provider field. Okay, so we've got that, and let's just go and say import. One thing to say about MEF is that your properties, fields, etc. do need to be public. The way that reflection works in Silverlight is it won't work onto private and protected properties and fields, so you need things to be public in order to get them exposed to MEF. It's just a limitation of the way reflection works. But if we do this import here and then put a breakpoint maybe down here, let's just press F5 on this, so that hopefully we'll be able to see that by the time we arrive down on that breakpoint, we have got our field populated for us by MEF with one of those album art providers. MEF did that population for us. Let's just shut that down for a second. Let's go and import a property as well. So let's say import, and we'll just say property I album art provider. Let's call that art provider property. And once again, if we press F5, we should be able to see that when we arrive down on a little breakpoint down there, not only has MEF populated this field for us, MEF has also populated this property for us. Okay, that's all kind of nice. It might not be very obvious to you right now as to what would happen if we did something like this. So let's go ahead and say, I want to import, and let's say public, should we have a property or a field? Let's go for a property. String, the missing string property. Okay, so we are now trying to import a string. Let's build that. Let's press F5. Boom. So MEF sees that and says, hey, you're trying to import a string. Do you know what? I can't find anyone anywhere that's exporting one. And so it doesn't sound very safe to me, so I won't let you do that. We have this missing import. We have a missing export, rather. No one is exporting this string, and so consequently you can't import it. But sometimes you might not want to be so strict. You might say, well, you know, if somebody is exporting a string, then I'd like to pick it up. But if they're not, I don't really care. So you might say, for instance, well, okay, so let's go ahead and say allow defaults. And in that case, what we'll see is that if the import can be matched, it'll be matched. And if it can't be matched, then it will be null, which is the default for a string, of course. So we can allow default values in the case where these things don't already exist. Something else that might not be immediately obvious, let me just get rid of that particular property, because that's just to show you that thing. If we go and have a look at the actual album art provider over here, so here's the album art provider. Let me put a breakpoint on its constructor and let's press F5. And what you'll notice is as the application spins up, we create 1, 2, 3, da. So we create 3 of those instances very aggressively, very early on. We don't need the functionality yet, but we've created 3 of those particular classes already to satisfy the 3 imports on our info provider, 1, 2, and 3. And it might be that that's okay, but maybe these objects are expensive to create and you want to defer the creation of them in some way. And you can do that in MEF, so let's just stop debugging. And instead of importing like this, what we could do is instead of importing like that way, we could use a new type in .NET Framework 4 and Silverlight 4, the lazy type. Have you encountered the lazy type at all? Sorry, I threw you then by raising my hand. That was unfair. Have you encountered the lazy type at all? Not many. It's very, very simple. It just stands for lazy instantiation. So we could say, I'm going to have a lazy one of these things of iAlbumArtProvider. And maybe we'll scrub this one just so we can be clear about what we're doing. So notice now I am importing once, twice, but this guy is lazy. So what will happen with this guy is down here we could say if artProviderField.haveyoualreadybeencreatedornot. So let's say if you haven't been created, then let's say var value equals artProviderField.value and cause it to be created right there and then. Let's move our breakpoint there instead of there. Remember now, we've only got 2 imports because I deleted one off. So there's the import satisfying the importing constructor. But then we run on, and the other import is not done. It'll only be done as we click our search button here. And as we click our search button here, we can see, has this field already been created or not? Value created false. So we step over that, and then we ask for the value of the field, and obviously we end up in the constructor on the other side. Notice that what I've got here is one component that knows nothing about another component, and it is now lazily instantiating that other component. But all it knows is an interface. But MEF is gluing the two together to make it so that it can do it. The other side of this particular example is, what if you wanted to create many instances dynamically? So for instance, if you are user interface and you are hosting dynamic views and you have plugged those views in via MEF, and the user clicks new email, you need to be able to create an instance of that new email view right there and then. This won't do it for you. It's not just about being lazy. You need to instantiate them as many times as you need. And you can do that again with MEF with a different kind of import. So if you go back to our imports again over here, instead of importing lazily here, let's go ahead and let's import as an export factory. If we import this as a factory, let me call it over here factory, then what we can do is walk up to that factory at any time and say, let's say for instance, for I equals 1 to 10, this dot factory dot, create me a new one of those things. And I could just say var value equals that. And what we get at that point, and if we just run that down into our debugger, is we just get the ability then to be able to dynamically, there's the one on the importing constructor, but then when we click our button, we're saying, look, we don't know what the component at the other end of this channel is, but make one. And there's one being created. And again, we say we don't know what it is, but make one. Do you need to see the other eight? No. Okay. I didn't think so. So you get the idea how we're decoupling these things from each other. Now, at the moment, what we're allowing MEF to do is we're simply saying to MEF, this is a class which exports itself as this interface. And so, hey, MEF, if you want to create these things, then create them whenever you like. That's fine. But sometimes you don't have a whole class to provide an export from. For instance, there are lots of things in the .NET framework which are singletons, and they live on static classes. So how would you get MEF to get to those instances and export them? Because you can't have MEF create a class if it's a static class. And for that reason, we support the notion of having a factory for your exports. So you can wrap a class around those statics so that you can export them. Let me just show you how that works. So over here somewhere, I've got another class here, which is a little factory class. Notice that the factory class is specifying a creation policy, in this case of non-shared. And what I can do on this is put, say, a public field. So we can say, okay, look, I want to export an iAlbum art provider. Let's call it art provider exported from a field. And let's create it here in the constructor. I wish I hadn't given it that name now. New album art provider. So in the constructor of this factory, we create one of these. And then we say to MEF, there is an export available from this field. What MEF would have to do is create an instance of the factory and grab the field as the exported value. And MEF is quite prepared to do that. However, if we do what I've just shown you on the screen here, we hit a problem. Press F5. Oh, dear, oh dear. So this doesn't work. MEF explodes on us because if you look at this from MEF's perspective, what we have here is an export of an iAlbum art provider. So MEF can create one of these and export this field. Over here, what we have is an export of an iAlbum art provider. So MEF could create one of these objects. And over here, what we've got is somebody saying, I import one iAlbum art provider. So MEF says, well, there's an export over there that matches perfectly. There's an export over there that matches perfectly. I do not know which of these two you intended, and you only asked for one. Therefore, I'm not going to guess, which is always good in software, not to guess. So it doesn't guess. It says, you've done something wrong. I can't figure this out for you. And that's where our exception came from. But maybe we do want to import many things, or maybe we wanted to import that specific thing. So let's go back to what we talked about with contracts on the slides. And let's say, okay, look, this one here, this is an export of foo. So that's now called foo. And if we go over to our art provider over here, oh, excuse me, wrong class. If we go over to our import over here, we can say, look, you are importing foo. And if you manage to type that correctly, I don't know what else we've got going on the screen at the moment, but we should still be able to run that import and export, and that should be fine. So notice that what we just did was we added a little bit to the contract to differentiate between those two particular imports. As I was saying, you might want to import many spell checkers or many calculation engines or many logging engines or whatever it might be that you're doing. Let's just make sure that we still get back to our breakpoint and things are good. They look like they are. So hidden away in my project over here, we've actually got some premium providers. I have the fancy album art provider. Like many fancy things in life, it doesn't work. We also have the super album art provider, which is even more of a marketing job, but that doesn't work any better either. And if you notice what's happening here, these are both being exported with the name of premium provider. And that is why we haven't hit them so far, because they're inside of my application, but Meph hasn't been seeing them because they've got this name on them. So what if I wanted to import these things? Well, let's go back over to our info provider here. And instead of importing one thing, let's import many things called premium provider. And what we can do is put that onto a public. We could make it an IEnumerable. We could make it a collection. We could make it an observable collection. I will just say public IEnumerable of iAlbum art provider. Let's call this premium providers. What do you want, a field or a method or a property? Field. Okay, field it is. So we have premium providers. And then what we could do down here is let's just put our breakpoint back maybe on this method. Let's press F9 on that. Let's press F5 on that. Did we do that correctly? Yeah. Click our button. And notice by the time we get to our method down here, we have premium providers, and we've got a fancy provider and a super provider. We've got both of those things on the screen. Now, we can go back to that notion of laziness again. We don't have to lose our laziness because laziness is good. And we could go back over here and say, actually, I don't want an enumerable of iAlbum art provider. I want an enumerable of lazy iAlbum art provider. So let's call these lazy but premium providers. Okay, so we've got those guys over there. And then we could go through them all. Let's say, let's write a little loop here. Let's say for each one. Oh, no. Let's say for each. Let's say it's for each item in this dot lazy dot but premium providers. Let's say if not item dot is value created, then let's say var value equals, sorry, item dot value. Force it to be created. And if we just leave our breakpoint where it is and run down to that piece of code, you'll notice that as we're doing this, let's do our search. Here we are with our lazy but premium providers. And if we look at those, you'll see that at the moment, neither one of them has been created yet. So when we come along, we say, look, has that one been created yet? No. Okay, create it. And now you'll see, hopefully, that one has now been created. If you just follow that down there, we can see that one's been created. So notice this was a way to bring in multiple imports onto one import, multiple exports onto one import, and create them lazily. But we can go a little bit further. We've started to differentiate with contracts. And if we go back to our premium providers, here's the contract on our particular provider. It says I'm an export with this particular name, and so on and so forth. We could add additional export metadata here. So we could say, let's add export metadata, some property, and some value. That would now further differentiate that particular export from the other one. One has a name, one has an extra lump of metadata on it. And we could add as many of these things as we want to. However, I'm not going to encourage you to do that because there's a better way of achieving this, which is remains more strongly typed. So let's look at a slightly better way of doing this. It might look a little bit more complicated, but hopefully you get the flavor as to what the result is. So let's just take a quick look. Instead of working like this, I actually have hidden away in my project. There's lots of things hidden away in this project. Not only premium providers, but paid for providers. So what we've got here is the cheap album art provider, which is an album art provider. And like many cheap things, it doesn't work. And we've also got the expensive album art provider, which doesn't work any better. And if you take a look at it, what we're using to export these is my own custom attribute, my own export attribute that I've derived. And notice it's using strong metadata here, strongly typed metadata, to indicate the cost is low on this one and the cost of high on that one. If we take a look at this particular attribute, let's just go and look at the definition of it. Don't be thrown by all the attributes on the attribute. What this is saying is, hey, I am a custom attribute deriving from Meph's export attribute. I'm used for metadata. And I add an extra property called cost. And this is just in enum. So if we take a look at that enum, you can see it's a difference between low and high. And it also sets the contract name, if you like, to be paid provider. So it just says every time you use this attribute, you will be calling your export paid provider, and you have this extra attribute here called cost. Now, this is a piece of magic that I'm about to show you in some ways. In order to pick this up and use it as distinguishing metadata at runtime, what you need to do is define an interface that perfectly matches the definition of this property that I'm showing you on the screen. So I have a spooky interface over here, this guy. I export album art metadata, which has this property on it called cost, which perfectly matches that other property. Unlike almost all interfaces you see in .NET, you will not implement this interface. That's not your job. MEF will dynamically create an implementation of this interface for you. So let me show you finally how you would put those things together. We talked a lot there. Let's go back to our info provider. And so here we were importing the premium providers. Let's say I want to import the paid providers. So those are those other two providers that I showed you. And now I don't just want a lazy of iAlbumArt provider. I also want access to the metadata. So I can say, okay, look, also give me the metadata interface that I defined. iExportAlbumArt metadata. It's a horrible name. Sorry for that. And let's call this providers with their metadata. Okay, so those are now our providers with their metadata. Look how I can now at runtime look at these imported functionality and make distinctions between them. So for instance, let's just go back here and get rid of this code. So we could say for each item in this dot, what did we just call those things? Providers with their metadata. Let's say if item dot metadata dot cost equals low, then good, I like cheap things. So let's say value equals item dot value. And it's being lazily created at that point. Let's put a breakpoint on that. We've already got one, actually. Let's get rid of that one. Press F5. And so notice now we've got these two exported providers. We're importing them lazily. Let's just get down to that line of code. We're importing them lazily. And if you look at them, here they are. And you can see that we've got both of them are not created yet at this point. We look at the first one, and we look at its cost. And we say, oh, the cost of this one is low. Great. Let's create it. Then we look at the second one and we say, what's the cost? And we say, oh, no, the cost of that export is too high. I won't bother to create that one. I don't like the look of it. So we don't create that one. So there's a whole lot of flexibility there between exports and their contracts and imports and their contracts around, are we importing one thing or many things? Do we allow defaults? What is the creation policy? Again and again and again, lots of different things there. Let me close that down. Okay, so that's moving us along in the story a little bit. Let's move along a little bit further. What I've not really said at the moment is how MEF finds any of these things. How does it know? How does it find your exports? How does it find your imports? Just a bit of terminology, really, here on this slide. You might be interested, I guess. It's a bit of perhaps an academic thing, this. Just a bit of terminology. MEF uses this notion of a part definition. A part definition is really like, in my mind, it's like a blueprint for a part. So you know in .NET you've got object and type, and you can walk up to type and you can say, create me one of those objects. And you can walk up to one object and say, give me your type. It's a little bit like that with part and part definition in MEF. The only really distinction being, and you can walk up to a part definition and say, hey, create me the part. The only difference is sometimes in MEF you can have a part that never had a part definition. So there's a bit of a breakdown in the analogy there. But essentially, think of a part definition as being a blueprint for a part, but you don't have to create the part necessarily. It's a description of a part. So what MEF does is we have a class called the composition container, which I haven't shown you yet, so we're introducing that on this slide at the bottom. And the composition container, which is the thing that does the compositions, as the name suggests, has a bunch of catalogs. And catalogs may contain other catalogs. And ultimately, at the root of all this, those catalogs will contain part definitions, descriptions of parts. And when you walk up to MEF and say, hey, would you make me one of these red objects here at the bottom? MEF says, oh, okay, you need a part that looks a bit like this. I'll just root through all my catalogs and see if I can find you such a part. Oh, yeah, there's a green part over here that seems to match your imports. I'll bring one of those in. Oh, but you also have another import for one of those yellow parts that you see up in the top right. Oh, okay, I'll go and look through my catalogs, grab one of those, create it, and bring it back. So MEF can search through these catalogs to find things. And let's go and... just before we do that, let me talk about this. The other thing is you can come to MEF alternatively with pre-existing objects. You may have already created the parts. So you new up two objects, and on the screen you can see that the red part imports something called foo, and the green part exports something called foo. And you walk up to MEF with those two components and say, hey, could you compose these for me? And MEF says, well, yeah, that's not too difficult because he imports something called foo and he exports something called foo. Ta-da! And puts them together. You know, so that's not too challenging. But you can walk up to MEF with existing components, or you can ask it to search its catalogs. Let's have a look at some of the built-in catalogs and see how those things shake out. So let's pop back over to our machine over here. And so this is pretty much the same thing that we've been using all the way along so far. I've probably changed it just slightly, so let me just make sure we haven't changed it too much. Let's just see what we've done. In our main page, I've probably gone back, and I have. In our main page, we've gone back to importing by interface. So that's as it was in the first example. Personally, I like importing by interface, so that's kind of why we've gone back to that. And of course, then we have our info provider. I don't think he's changed too much. There's our info provider exporting himself by interface, importing the artwork provider, and I don't think the artwork provider has changed at all. So it's all kind of as it was before. And let me show you in the first instance, hopefully this is currently working. So we do our search, and everything is good. And then what we can do, if you remember, the only function call we have made to MEF so far is this one here. And in an ideal world, you would never call any other MEF function, although we don't really live in an ideal world. But in an ideal world, that would be the only one line of MEF code you would ever see. But I'm going to show you some others. So I've got a piece of code over here that runs before this. So here's a little piece of code that runs before that line of code I just showed you. So let's go here and let's create ourselves a composition container. So let's say composition container, let's say container equals new composition container. So we create one. And then let's walk up to MEF and say composition host dot initialize container. Let's press F5. And all hell breaks loose. We have broken the application completely. I don't know if you're expecting that. Personally, I was, because I did this yesterday and it broke there as well. So if we take a look at this, what did we just do? Well, we created an empty container that had no catalogs in it. And then this call here says to MEF, this is, if you like, the default container. This is the ambient container. This is the container to use if there is no other container specified. So we created a container with no catalogs in it. And then we said, that's the default container. So when we hit this line of code over here, just here, MEF looked into its container and searched through all zero catalogs and found nothing to satisfy our imports, and so we didn't get our imports satisfied. And you know from earlier on that if you have a required import that's not satisfied, MEF will throw an exception, unless you allow defaults, which we don't do. So what we could do is start to populate some catalogs back here. So there's three built-in catalogs I'll show you here. They're very simple. So this is by far the simplest, the type catalog. So here's the type catalog. Let's create one. And let's put into there the type of the album art provider and the type of the album info provider. There's a catalog with two types in it. One thing to say about the type catalog is once you've created it, you cannot change it. So it has a bunch of parts in it, but you can't add those things. So there's nothing you can do. Once it's created, it's created. We could then walk up to our container and create the container with the catalog. So now we've created a catalog. We've put that into the container. We've initialized with the container, and life should be back to working nicely like it was before. So we search, and all is good. Is it very obvious to you how MEF is finding those types now? Is that very, very obvious? Oh, dear. Is it reasonably obvious to you how MEF is finding those types now? Well, that's better. Okay, so it's reasonably obvious. That's not too bad. That's a minor success on my part. So, I mean, basically, we're telling it where they are. We're saying, here's a type and here's another type. That's it. That's your entire range of catalogs. That's all you need to know. So it's very, very simple. We could also use a thing called an aggregate catalog. So let's make an aggregate catalog. Let's call this aggregate catalog. Make a new one of those. And we could put into this thing, I'll tell you what we'll do, actually. Let's split our type catalogs up into two. So let's say catalog one equals new type catalog type of album info provider. And let's say catalog two equals new type catalog type of album art provider, that thing. So now we've got two type catalogs. And I only introduced them really so that we can feed them to our aggregate catalog. So we can give it catalog one and catalog two. And then what we could do is put our aggregate catalog into our container, and life should be back to being good again. So we've just got an aggregate catalog is just a bunch of other catalogs. It makes it sound really boring, but there's this one just kind of key feature of the aggregate catalogue. And the key feature of the aggregate catalogue, in many ways for me, is that having created it, we can then walk up to it and add more catalogues. Catalogue 2. That should just work just the same as it did before. So the aggregate catalogue is nice because we can add things to it after it has been created. There's one other catalogue to show you here, and that's a thing called the assembly catalogue. We can create one of those very easily. Let's just create an assembly catalogue. Catalogue. Let's make a new one of those. And then we give it an assembly. So we could say assembly.getExecutingAssembly. So make a catalogue of all the components you find by reflection by looking in this assembly here and use that as your main catalogue in your application. Press F5. And that kind of still works the way it did before. So what's interesting is what happens if you don't do any of these things, because you don't have to do any of this stuff. You know, if I just comment that code out, our application should just go back to working. So it should go back to working. What does MEF do if you don't do what I just showed you? Well, what it does is when you first hit a line of code like this one here, excuse me, composition-initializer.satisfy-imports, MEF says, oh, have they set up a default catalog and a default container? Because if they haven't, I will create one for them. If they have, I will use it. And we've been just changing the default container, as you saw a minute ago. If you don't do it, what MEF does is something like this code here. So if I call this part initializer replica function and show it to you, what MEF pretty much does is it creates an aggregate catalog, and then it looks around all the assemblies that were deployed with your Silverlight application. It loads all of those, and for each one, it creates an assembly catalog and puts it into the aggregate, and then it initializes the host with that aggregate catalog. And that is why all our code up until this example just magically worked, because everything was in one assembly, everything was in one zap, and so MEF just reflected all over it and found the exports and the imports and joined them together. So that's how that stuff was working all along. Okay. Let's pop back out of that. Okay, so that's kind of interesting. And it follows on to a topic that's about things changing over time. So we have this notion of recomposition. When you look at the screen, what we've got on the right-hand side there is a red component. I'm getting wrong with my right and left-hand sides here. We've got a red component, and let's say he's been dealt with by a composition container that already exists over there. So let's say that what we've done is we've gone to that container and we've said, can you compose this red component for us? And the container has said, sure, I can compose that for you. You'll be needing a couple of these parts over here. I will bolt you together. So he has been composed. And then as you just learnt, it is possible to change catalogs over time. We could add a new part into a catalog, or we could add a catalog into an existing container or an existing catalog within that container. So basically, over time, stuff can change. And the question is, what should MEF do about that? So having seen that we've already composed this part up on the diagram, what if another part comes along that would have been a suitable export to match that import? So let's say, for instance, I import spell checkers and I run my application and a spell checker shows up. And then later on, some code alters the catalogs, causing another spell checker to show up. What should happen? Should I be notified of that or not? And in MEF, you can be notified of that, and it's known as being recomposable. The idea that your imports can be changed over time. Now, in Silverlight, this is really quite important, because in a Silverlight application, let's say you are writing the mythical Silverlight word processor, which gets a lot easier in Silverlight 4, and what you want in Silverlight, generally speaking, is a small initial zap download of your functionality, because the user's trying to get to the functionality as quickly as they possibly can. They don't want to download a 723 megabyte zap file. That's not what they're hoping for. So they get an initial web download of, say, the word processor, and what gets downloaded to the client says, hey, I would like to import a spell checking engine, but, you know, if there isn't one around right now, it doesn't really matter. I just won't offer the user any spell checking functionality. But then maybe later on what you do is download another zap file that says, hey, I am a component that implements spell checking. And from a MEF perspective, we can say, ah, right, we can recompose this application. The guy who was waiting for a spell checker, one has just shown up. And so for Silverlight applications, which are rich internet applications being downloaded over a browser connection, this is really, really useful. And let me try and show you that. We have another catalogue in the framework called the deployment catalogue, which does exactly this for you. It's a really slick catalogue. Let's go back and take a look at that. So what's happened to the screen? There we go. I've sort of changed the project here, so I need to just walk you through the project structure. Everything up until now has been in one single assembly and zap. That's no longer the case. So the first thing we've done is I've moved my interfaces into a simple class library so that they can be referenced from the main application and also from the two plugins we have. Our plugins are, of course, the info provider and the artwork provider. So I've just put my interfaces into this this assembly here. So they're just in a class library. It's very simple. Then what we've done is we've taken our album art provider and moved him into his own project. So he's just up here. Of course, he's referencing MEF, and he's referencing the interfaces I just showed you so that he can compile. And he's still just an art provider, exporting himself as an art provider. One thing I want to kind of ram home at this point is notice that the code doesn't really change here. For the person doing the export, nothing has changed. It's just a bit of functionality that's exported. It's fine. And so he now builds out into a separate zap. So if you notice on the website here, we have three zaps. We have the main zap for the app. Did I just say zap for the app? We have the main zap for the application. And then what we've got is a zap that contains the info provider and a zap that contains the art provider. So we've actually got three zaps now making up this application. Obviously, down here, we've got the implementation. Oh, where is it? We've got the implementation of the info provider. He's just there importing stuff just like he did before. Let's go to our main page and let's take a look at that. So here's our main page. And our main page is still importing an iAlbum info provider. But notice, he allows recomposition. And he also allows a default value. So this is really important. When this application is first run up, we will have one zap downloaded into the client. We will not have an info provider. We will not have an album provider. So we have to allow defaults because the application will start with the functionality missing. So we have to allow defaults. The functionality is going to show up over time. So we allow defaults and we allow recomposition. Just like we did before, when the application started up, we initialized the application by calling satisfy imports on this. And then what we do is a little bit extra. So let me just try and show you that extra code. What we do at the start of the application is we create an aggregate catalog. And then I've just got two hard-coded URIs for the two other zap files. We use a deployment catalog in a loop, so we create two deployment catalogs, one for each URI. We tell those things to download themselves asynchronously, and we add them into the aggregate catalog. That aggregate catalog is the main catalog, the default catalog for the app. So notice what happens. We start up the application, create an aggregate, put two download catalogs in it. We tell them to asynchronously download the other components. They will show up over time, and MEF will recompose the application over time to add that functionality. Let me try and show you that a little bit with breakpoints. Let me just put some breakpoints on here and press F5. So the application is going to spin up. So here we are setting up the catalog in the first place to download the other components asynchronously. Let's let that go. And initially, we call composition initializer satisfy imports. If you notice, at this point, we have no album info provider. It has not been asynchronously downloaded over the network yet. So we haven't got one. Oh, by the way, I should say, actually, it is possible for you to be notified every time MEF recomposes your object. And I am doing that here just so I can show it to you. And what you do is you implement this interface here. It's called iPart import satisfied notification. Possibly the longest interface name in .NET, I'm not sure. And all you have to do to implement that is implement a function here called onImportSatisfied. And every time MEF recomposes your object, it will call you. So you can see at the moment it's called us and there is no info provider. But then that download will happen. And it says, okay, there's still no info provider showed up yet. We run again. And the info provider has shown up. And it's got also, as you will notice, an album art provider. This is kind of interesting in a way. Let me just show you the info provider. Let me just make sure this is true. If you notice one feature about the info provider, do you remember that the main page said, I want an info provider, but I'll allow it to be null? The info provider says, I want an art provider. and I won't allow it to be null. So until both components show up, this component is useless. And notice how flexible that is. This guy is saying, I only work with that other guy. So when he shows up, I will be useful. When he doesn't show up, I'm not useful. And that's kind of how we did that there. Have you got a question there?
Yeah. What happens if the zap file is not yet downloaded, but you're already using the instance, well, not the variable?
So gentleman's question at front is, what happens if the zap file hasn't downloaded, but you start using the instance? So if you notice what happened here, the variable went from null to a value. And when it went to a value, not only was the top-level component available, the sub-level component was already available. That's kind of my point of this not allowing... on this guy here, on this import, we do not allow defaults. So consequently, those two components will come together or not at all. And perhaps there's a picture on the follow-on slide that might help with that, but they'll come together or not at all. So the top-level property will be null or set, but then the inner object reference will always be set if the upper reference is set. Does that make sense? Does that make sense?
Yeah, kind of. I'm thinking as if you have a variable, you want to start using it, so Memphis is going to initialize the variable for you.
No, so if you've just got a property that Mef hasn't composed onto yet, then it will just sit at its default value, so in null, largely.
Yeah.
So you notice here, I think somewhere here, I'm checking, is this null? Because if it's null, it means Mef has not yet done its composition on that variable and produced a satisfactory result. Make sense? Come back to me later on if it doesn't quite answer your question. So what we did here was download extra pieces of functionality over time, which is a key kind of scenario for Mef. Let's shut this down and pop back over to our pictures for a second. So we've seen all of the four catalogs that exist in Mef, the type, assembly, aggregate, and deployment. Let's just look at a feature of composition, and let's look at this. Kind of coming back to your question a little bit, is this, Mef supports this notion of stable composition, and we saw it there on the screen, actually, as it happens. If you have a part that says, I require another part, not optional, I require another part. And that subsequent part says, well, I also require a part, but it's missing. Then from Mef's perspective, the whole object hierarchy is missing. So if I depend on foo, and foo depends on bar, and bar is missing, then foo is also missing. So it makes sure that it never composes you with half a hierarchy. You get all the things that required the imports, which are a little bit aligned to your question. The other side of this is about not breaking people. So let's say we've got this green part on the screen here, and he has gone ahead and been composed with the blue part that you see below him. So he's been composed with that blue part. And then maybe somebody comes along to that container and says, look, I would like to add into this container a new part that would also match the existing import on that green part up there. So we've got a guy that's been composed with a spell checker, and he or she has been told, this is the only spell checker. There you go. Go run with it. Somebody else comes up to the container and says, I want to put in a new kind of spell checker. And Mef is going to say, yeah, but there's a guy over there that I told there was only one spell checker in the world, and he doesn't allow recomposition, so I can't allow you to put that component into the container. You would break the promise I gave to that guy over there. Consequently, you will get bounced. Let me try and illustrate this for you back in the demo. And frankly, if I still got the thing running up, this is by far the most complex thing that I would show you. And I've just opened the wrong project, so bear with me one second. Let me just spring this guy back up. Same example as we were running with. And it is by far the most complex thing. So you can make some kind of, maybe you can do our yes, no noise as to whether this makes any sense to you or not. We'll try and see how it goes. So secretly in this project, while we were running, I keep having secret things in my projects today. So secretly, let's just let that run through. We had this missing button at the bottom of the screen. Now, what I didn't show you was that in one of these zaps, there's actually another art provider. It is the super album art provider. He exports himself as an iAlbum art provider, and he imports a missing string. So the reason why Mef never saw this provider at all was because Mef looked at this provider and said, well, I see that you are an art provider, but I also see that you have a missing import. Therefore, I will completely ignore you. I will shun you. I will not speak to you. I am not interested in you. Please go away. You are not an art provider as far as I am concerned. You're just a pretend, fake, sham art provider. So it's kind of interesting. What if we had something in the application that actually exported this missing string? Suspiciously enough, over in my main application, I've got this guy here called String Factory. String Factory exports the missing string. So that would make that other component a viable option. And on my UI, we've got that button. And when you click on the button, what it does is it walks up to the aggregate catalog and adds a new catalog for the String Factory component I just showed you. So if we press F5, then what we have is initially we run the application. It downloads a ZAP that has two art providers in it, but one of them is not viable. So we ignore it, and so everything works. Then we click on this button that adds another new item into the catalog that would make the Super Album art provider a viable option. And MEF says no. If we take a look at that, I don't know if I can just get to that exception. Let's just grab that guy. Can we do show me the exception. Add watch. Da, 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 da. Da, message. Da, da. MEF says, I'll give you a while to read that. MEF, by the way, has fantastic exceptions. MEF says, initially I saw two possible matches for the import, but one of them was dead to me because it had a missing export. If you add in the missing export, that component will become viable. But I've already made a promise to this other guy that there's only one of these things. So I can't let you do that right now. Sorry. And that's what the exception says in plain language. I will say you get great, great, great exceptions from MEF. Did that kind of make sense to you? Is it kind of a yeah or a no? Cool. Okay, that's by far the most complicated thing I show you here today. And it kind of shows you the power of what MEF is doing to analyze all these imports and exports and so on. Okay, let's shut that guy down. Okay, so we talked about that a little bit. Just one last topic I want to kind of drop into just before we finish up. And that's the notion of, because we kind of looked at MEF from the point of view of plugins and so on, and how we can download things over the network. There's an awful lot of people using the model view model pattern for Silverlight and WPF application development. I know there's been a couple of talks on MVVM here at the conference. Are people fairly familiar with MVVM? Is there an idea of what that pattern might be? Okay, so I mean, this is really something that just spins out of Silverlight and the fact that Silverlight is very good at declarative data binding. And really, all you, I guess from the point of view of what I show here, is you really, in MVVM, you want to have a view which is largely, if not entirely, declarative, often just solely authored in XAML, although some people fight about whether you should have a bit of code in there as well. I'm not going to get into that fight here. But you have a view which is largely declarative, and that's just the presentation. And then you have that with a view model, and the view model provides the data and the state and the functionality to the specific view. And the thing in MVVM is that these two things don't know anything about each other. The view does not know about the view model. The view model does not know about the view. They're just connected by data binding. And in some ways, it's kind of testament to the strength of data binding in Silverlight and WPF that you can do that. So you can use MEF for this, and I just wanted to give you a little example of a very simple way you might use MEF for this. And we actually break out of the whole thing to do with albums and art and all that stuff, because I could not shoehorn this into that particular demo scenario. So I just moved to something completely different for a second. It's very, very simple, quite deliberately. Let me just show you this. Maybe we'll run this up first. So very, very simple UI with very simple functionality behind it. So we have three views on the screen. They're big and colorful. They're very big here, actually. Look at that. Wow. Yeah, they're very big. View one here is just like a little stopwatch, so we can start and stop. You get the idea. View two is just the date. View three is just the time. So we have three very simple views. Let me just show you how I stitch these together with MEF. So at the top level of this application, of course, I have a main page XAML file. And what I'm using here is a tab control. So I just say, hey, there's a tab control which is going to display any number of views, and it's just data bound. So we just data bind onto those views. Let me show you the code behind my tab control. We have our main page, and the main page says, I import a bunch of views. Now, that interface, in my case, doesn't have any functionality on it. That is just a marker interface. If we take a look at it, you can see there is no functionality on being a view. I'm just using it as a marker. So this page imports any number of views. You might have noticed I actually bound to this property here called tab views below. The reason I did that is because the tab control seems to be a little bit weird in Silverlight. Unlike most other controls, it actually expects you to supply it with tab items, not just arbitrary objects. So I had to do a little trick just to turn my objects into tab items, which is what we do here. But apart from that, that's it. That's our code. So let's go and take a look at a few views. In our folder over here, we have our views for the date, the time, and the stopwatch. And if you look at the date view, you'll see the date view, of course, is just XAML, and it's just data bound. And so this view needs connecting with its view model. And so what we have in the code behind in this case is, well, firstly, we say that the creation policy is non-shared. I think this makes perfect sense for views in a user interface. You know, you create three different views, you expect three different objects, and so that's why this is non-shared. Hopefully that makes sense. Notice, of course, that we are exporting this as an iView, our date view, and then notice that it imports something that I've called, and I've just used a literal string here for clarity on the screen, date view model. And what it does when that thing gets imported is it sets it as its data context. So we have a view which is exporting itself as an iView, and we have the view then importing a view model of type object as date view model, and it sets that view model as the data context. So we bind across to that thing. If we go over into our models folder, where's our models folder? Oh no, sorry, our view models folder. Sorry, my mistake. Let's find this date view model. It's just a class that exports itself as an object called date view model. And again, this is non-shared. So every view is going to get their own view model created for it. That's what's going to happen with this thing. You might also notice that this view model imports a model called iTimeModel. And that's just over here living in my models folder. The time model, iTimeModel, exports itself that way. And actually, the time model I said was shared, so there's only one time model in the application. So just to chase that through again, if you look at how this is all being wired together or not, as the case may be, our main page simply says, I import a bunch of views. In order to find views, all we have to do is mark our view as being an export of type view, and the view imports its view model. We have the view model, which exports itself and imports a model. And Meph is just going to stitch those components together. We could put them in separate assemblies. We could download them asynchronously. Life would be good. I've made it simpler here, but we could do those things. We could also, of course, interfere and manipulate the composition container in order to inject mock versions of these various components in order for you to run your unit tests. So you could do that as well. So these things are completely kind of decoupled in terms of who creates what. Meph stitches them together, and you can replace implementations inside of the container. Let's pop back over here. Okay, hopefully that made sense. Just a couple of pointers to some slightly more advanced topics, but these are just pointers, nothing more than that. The first one would around the idea of extensibility. I have to admit that all the way through this talk, I have been lying to you completely about catalogs, but it was for kind of the right reason. In truth, Meph doesn't know anything much about catalogs. If you want to extend Meph to surface your own components, you can author a catalog, so you can derive from a class called Composable Part Catalog and write your own catalog. But there's actually an easier way of bringing components into Meph, which is to write a thing called an export provider. So you can write catalogs, you can write these export providers. You might even notice on the screen that I've got on the picture that a composition container knows about export providers, and at the top right of the screen, a composition container turns out to be an export provider. So you can put containers inside containers. You can do all kinds of fancy things that I've not really led you down the route of doing here today. In general, simpler is better. The other thing I might have given you is an idea that Meph is all to do with attributes. You know, we walk up to these components and we say export attribute, import many attribute, part creation policy attribute. And in truth, that is part of Meph, but it's a replaceable part of Meph. It's what Meph calls a programming model, and the default programming model in Meph in Silverlight 4 and on the desktop is the attributed programming model, where you attribute up your classes to say import, export, creation policy, etc. But you don't have to do that. If you want to choose some other way that you describe the imports and exports on your components and their creation policies and so on, then you can write your own programming model for MEF and replace it. So if you're one of those people that has a plain old CLR object, a POCO approach, you don't want to attribute your code, that's fine. You can still use MEF if you come up with a programming model that does describe to MEF what your composable parts actually are. I started one of those on my site at one point, which was like an entirely XAML-based model. So you had perfectly clean objects, classes, and then you attributed them with an extra piece of XAML to describe their imports and exports. So we did all that stuff. So this is a very extensible framework. If you want more resources on MEF, just to point you to a few places, I made some screencasts on Channel 9. If you go to channel9.msdn.com/tags/learnmefsl4, if this talk was not too long for you, then there's probably about 6 or 7 hour expanded version of this talk in various videos on Channel 9. So watch them at high speed and they whip by a little bit faster. If you're interested in finding blogs on MEF, the very best blog to subscribe to is blogs.msdn.com/gblock. That's Glenn Block, who is the sort of father of MEF over in the States. And again, if you're interested in the source code for MEF, have a look at mef.codeplex.com because you can poke around in the source code and experiment there. With that, I'm pretty much done. The one thing I'd say to you is that I hope you found this talk useful. I hope you've got a picture of what MEF is and what you might do with it. It's one of those frameworks that's very simple conceptually, but then you start to think, but I could use it for this or I could use it for that. I could use it for many, many different things. So I hope you got that from the talk and I hope you enjoyed it. It's certainly been a pleasure to be here with you this afternoon. I would encourage you, as this picture says here, I'm sure the conference has a mechanism for evaluation and feedback. I'm not going to ask you for great feedback, and I'm certainly not going to ask you for bad feedback. What I would ask you for is just feedback. So if you have an opportunity to evaluate this session, personally, I would make a plea to you to evaluate the session. It's very, very helpful to speakers. If you loved this talk, that's great. I love you too. If you hated this talk, that's okay. I don't hate you too. But either way, I'd like to know about it. So if you get the opportunity's feedback, then please, I know it's easy to go home from these conferences and you have feedback, put it in the bin. But it would be nice if you provided that feedback. So thanks a lot for coming and enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.